Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to Straight Wives Talk Show. And our show is held every Sunday night. It's a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. And each week, my co-host is Misty Hall, and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So good evening, Misty. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Good evening to you, Bonnie. How are you?
I'm doing good. We got past the heat wave here, but I heard we're going to be getting another one.
Well, it's just that we're in the permanent heat wave season in Florida. I mean, it's no wave. It's just it's here for the summer.
And we had some of our wonderful friends from our support chat online tonight from the South, and I felt so bad for them.
Oh.
And, you know, they're having really hot weather down there.
Mm-hmm. I know. My mother was in Kentucky last week for a funeral. Her aunt passed away, unfortunately, and the weather was 100 degrees, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy for this time of year in Kentucky, but it's
really oppressive.
Mm-hmm. Been really hot.
Any time of year, anywhere. That's why, you know, I stay out of Texas, too.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't find me in Las Vegas or Texas of the summer, that's for sure. Florida's bad enough.
And they always say it's dry heat, but I don't know what that means.
I don't care. Dry heat, wet heat, heat is heat as far as I'm concerned.
Right. 100 degrees is still 100 degrees, no matter where it is.
It's triple digit. You got it, my friend.
So, anyway, I want to say hello to all of our listeners and thank you for your support and your kind words, because you send us mail every week and some of you call in on the shows. And tonight we're going to give you our call-in number. It's area code 646-716-4893. And I'll repeat that again. Area code 646-716-4893. Tonight we're expecting a very special guest who was unfortunately technically, because of technology, cut off from our show several weeks ago, Dr. Lauren Olson. So he is hopefully going to be rejoining us shortly. Before he does, I just want to make a few announcements that if you're interested in getting together at our September get-together, it's going to be in Philadelphia this year. On the weekend of September 24th and 25th, you're in Philadelphia. So we're going to have a number of straight wives together, and it's really going to be a powerful event. We'll also be celebrating my 60th birthday that weekend, so we're going to be having a lot of fun activities besides just being together as a group. But I think Misty will attest to the fact that there is always power in numbers when you meet other straight wives. Wouldn't you say so, Misty?
Absolutely. That's what I tell everyone. When people come together with the same intention, and they set that intention to heal, tell your story and heal, it's the most powerful thing you can ever experience. It's beyond words. You just have to experience it. So if your mission to heal from the damage done, from the marriage, relationship, whatever it is you need to do to find yourself again, give yourself this gift. This is truly a gift. This is something that, you know, that you offer, I assist you in, and it's, you're not going to find this for no amount of money anywhere, you know, just give yourself this gift. It's amazing.
Right. And Misty and I donate our time, you know, so there's not a charge for the whole session. You just have to cover the transportation and the lodging, which is relatively inexpensive. I have a good deal here in Philadelphia. So it's just a matter of getting here and really uniting with other women who can understand everything you're feeling. You never even have to say a word. Everybody
mm-hmm.
understands it. And I think that's one of the problems, Misty, when you're going through this. You just feel so isolated and alone, correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, I've just recently got several emails from my website, and that's so interesting that you brought that up. The women, they do feel so isolated. And something else that I find that just breaks my heart, they feel isolated, and they isolate themselves even more because they're afraid to reach out. They're afraid that other people's going to judge them. And that's what I tell all the women that contact me. You know, I'm not here to judge you. I have been a straight wife before. I know what it's like. I know what it's like to live in the closet, you know. So please seek support. Seek support through someone that understands what's going on, whether it be a professional, whether it be, you know, a friend, someone that has some experience in this arena, because it can be very embarrassing for the straight wife, and they feel ashamed, and a lot of times they will not step forward. And, you know, it's just too hard to heal on your own. I mean, it's going to take so long. I've read some studies, you know, from grief to heal on your own, it can take like 5 to 8 years. You know, don't lose that many years of your life.
I totally agree with you, and that's why, you know, this focusing on men and their issues.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing is that women also feel, like, really isolated when they're going through this. They think they're the only one, and it's really hard for them to, you know, think that they're not alone. But
exactly.
I think right now we should have our guest with us. I hear the beeping. Hold on one second. Hello?
Hello, this is Lauren.
Hi, Lauren. Thank you
How
so much
you?
For coming back. This is Bonnie and Misty.
How
are you?
Talk to you again, both. Yeah, I'm doing well, actually. Yeah, thank you.
Good. How are things in your part of the country?
Well, it's been a pretty hot but nice weekend otherwise. Things are going well otherwise.
Good. And Lauren, I feel so terrible because the last time you were here, you know, this never happened to us before. There was that technical difficulty that's been resolved, of course, but, you know, you were the victim of a bad snag here on Block Talk Radio.
I'm a victim of my own technology a lot, Bonnie, so it's not a big deal.
I know what you mean. We're too old for the technology, Lauren.
I know it.
Lauren and I are from the same generation, so technology is a tough thing, I think. But anyway, thank you so much for being our guest. And, you know, when we were last together talking, we were talking about your book that just came out called Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight. And I was really amazed by this book because there were so many interesting points that you make in here. So, you know, we may have some callers who are interested in talking to you. And once again, if you have questions to ask Lauren, you can call here at area code 646-716-4893. And after we listen to his story, we're happy to entertain any questions you may have. So, Lauren, please start telling our listeners about you.
Well, I'm in my late 60s now, and I really came out when I was 40 after being married for 18 years to a woman that I have two daughters with, and we now have six grandchildren together. And shortly after I left my marriage, I met the man that I'm still with. We've been together almost 25 years now, and are legally married here in Iowa now as of the last 2 years. And I heard a little bit of your conversation earlier, and I think it was about 5 years in our relationship with my ex-wife. I don't like the word ex-wife for some reason. It seems so cold. There was a period of about 5 years when we were really into negotiating child issues and financial issues and all of those kinds of things. But it took about that long, I think, to really come back together, begin the process of rapprochement. When I first came out, I was afraid to come out, even after I sort of really recognized that I was gay. Most people find it hard to believe that I didn't have any idea that I was until I really met a man while I was still married, and he was married, and we fell in love, and it was a shock to me what it led to, and then I had to figure out what was I going to do with this new information about myself, and I felt like I couldn't contain it.
All right, so Lauren, let's go back a little bit, because you're a doctor, psychiatrist, so
right.
You start with many people in this situation, not only from a, you know, personal point of view, but from a medical point of view.
Sure.
From understanding human, you know, psychology and how the brain works.
Uh-huh.
So here are some of the questions that some of my women had sent in, you know, after the last segment where unfortunately you were cut off.
Uh-huh.
Of things they would have liked to have understood a little better. So maybe you can explain to us. Now, I know that you were married for a number of years, and, you know, after reading your book, you know, I understood a lot as far as not recognizing the fact that you were gay. But can you talk a little bit you know, like women want, they don't understand this concept. So maybe
even a lot of gay people don't understand it, because a lot of people who came out earlier in their life sort of have said they always knew. And I think part of it was based on the time I grew up. I mean, I grew up in the 50s when there wasn't a lot of information available. The word gay wasn't used even in slander at that time. About the worst thing that people got called was being a sissy, and you knew you didn't want to be that. But as far as it having any deeper meaning than that, I really didn't have a clue. And then...
did you feel that you had any attractions for men when you were in your teens?
Early teens, I think. Mm-hmm. There were times when we'd get together on like Boy Scout camping trips and stuff like that, and there'd be a certain amount of sexual play and stuff. But, you know, even those who have lived heterosexualized and continue to be heterosexual were involved in that, and I don't think anybody thought too much about it. And I suppose...
Just like a natural thing that young guys did.
Yeah, and then I think when we got to be 14 or so, when the other boys began to orient toward women, I just never felt the same drive to do that. Now, as you know from reading my book, but the other people don't, I lost my father when I was very young, I was 3. And so I kind of always explained this fractured sense of masculinity I had based on my father, and thinking if my father had only been a part of my life, that I wouldn't have had that difficulty. And but I've talked to other men, they all seem to have something in their lives that they explain away that difference. But I really had no awareness. Now, having said that, when I did begin to really address it directly, then I'm aware that there were clues all along the way that I missed and I just turned away from. And it was one of those things where the mind has a powerful capacity to block out the things that we don't want to know about ourselves. And that was one of the things that was just too overwhelming for me to experience directly for a long, long time.
Okay, well, let's go back to when you were growing up. As you mentioned, back in the 1950s, life was very different.
Very different.
And we were really limited on how much information we knew about gay.
Absolutely.
And anything we did know about gay was pretty much, you know, the way television, you know, they had their stereotypes and Milton Berle getting dressed up like a woman and that was supposed to be gay.
Yeah, and, you know, people sort of snickered about Liberace, and, you know, there were those kinds of innuendos that were going on, but really anything more direct than that was just not a part of my experience.
Exactly, and we're going back now to the 1950s, but let's, you know, fast forward ahead to now.
Uh-huh.
Now, gay is something that everybody knows about, you know, no matter where you live in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certainly been enough information. People are exposed to it. People see movies about it. People know gay people. So has it changed now, or do you think that people are still hung up on this, with not recognizing that they're gay?
Well, I think that there. I mean, I talk to people every day who still have an issue with accepting it. And a lot of it has to do with sort of your geography, your educational level, your spiritual experiences, and some of the immigrant communities, the African-American community in particular, has a great deal of difficulty dealing with it. So there are a lot of sort of subpopulations within the larger community where it still remains very, very difficult experience it. So it hasn't gone away. Even though there's more information out there, it only sort of heightens the anxiety and the distress of those who struggle with it. So it'd be hard, I think, to experience what I did in terms of really just not knowing at this point. It would be hard for that. But I'm not sure for a lot of people it's a lot easier to come out.
No, I'm not saying that. You know, I understand that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But how about as far as at least accepting it?
Boy, again, it's I just have had a communication. I think I wrote about it in the book with a young black African American from the South who is 27, and he's doing everything he can to avoid having to deal with it with his family, and he feels that he is potential victim of violence if he does. I mean, it's many times within sort of the immigrant populations, those people feel that they need to choose between their sexuality and their ethnic status because it's so unacceptable in some of those communities. And of course, when I communicate with many from the Middle East and so on, of course, there people are still being killed. People who live in Africa still are. So there's a lot of places where it's still a great deal of difficulty for young men to come out and to.
Absolutely, and that's why I always say it's so much better living in this country.
Yeah.
Because even though there are consequences if you have a religious family, you know, it's still so much easier than when you go to the Muslim world. You know, I get letters all the time from people from there, from, you know, China, Asian countries.
Yeah, I have a young guy that I communicate with in China who's said, you know, he knows he's in the university, he knows that he's gay, but at the same time he says, I'm the only son, I have to go home and take care of my parents, and they expect me to, when I get home, come home from college, to bring a woman with me who will be my wife. And so he's still very much struggling with what the cultural expectations are of him and what he wants to do. And some of them, of course, believe that if they get married that maybe it will change. But it's really hard for me to hear when people are saying, please help me deal with this, help me get rid of this this demon that I experience when they're referring to their sexual orientation. They'd almost do anything to get rid of it because they don't want to deal with the realities of what they might experience. But it's not just, you know, nations across the seas. It's certainly here in this country, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You find that the religious right-wing groups?
Oh, yes. Yeah, particularly
fundamentalist.
Bible Belt areas. That's also very true. Yeah.
How about where you're living now?
Well, Iowa is sort of an interesting place because most people don't know that, you know, Iowa has sort of been on the leading edge of most social issues. Women voted here early. They were always been equally accepted into the universities and were early into the law school and the med school. And so there's really been sort of that background in our state history that most people don't know. At the same time, there's also a very fundamental evangelical Christian element that really is opposed to same-sex marriage, for example. And even though the Supreme Court allowed same-sex marriage 2 years ago, it's created a certain amount of political activity, and so there is some resistance, although the polls would suggest that the resistance is down once people, I think, begin to know us and experience us as real people. You know, it's easy to hate somebody you don't know and you haven't had any experience with. But when they, for example, there is a fairly prominent Republican that has developed a group of Republicans for Freedom, and he is, he's not a politician now, but he's trying to develop a group of Republicans who come out in support of same-sex marriage. He wouldn't dare do that if he was standing for re-election, however, you know, because you can't tread on that party line. So it's, but you know, and when Doug and I were planning our marriage, wherever we went, people were celebrating it with us. From the time we went to the courthouse to get our license to when we got our rings, you know, with the photographers, the caterers, and just everybody. And we invited. We live in a very small town, a fairly conservative town, and we decided to invite even our most conservative friends, and the majority of them came. There were very few who said that they wouldn't come to our wedding because they didn't believe in it. So, and I think the more that
Were your daughters there?
Oh yes, very much so. And my grandchildren and my sons-in-law and my sisters were there.
Mm-hmm.
We had a very small sort of intimate wedding with about 30 people, and then a big celebration afterwards with about 300 people. And because we wanted the ceremony to be sort of an intimate and private kind of moment, just for our best friends, not for curiosity seekers or anything like that. We wanted that experience, but then we really wanted to celebrate with all the people that we knew that would want to be a part of it. And so it was a wonderful experience. And I had one uncle who had a real struggle with it and didn't come. But he's a very conservative Christian man and just had a hard time dealing with it. But I've never felt that he loves me any less for it. And I respect that I can't reconcile his religious faith with what we've done. I respect his right to do that. But what I think is important is that, you know, that he can disagree with me on that level, but that we still are able to love each other and maintain a friendship.
Lauren, how did your wife accept it when you told her the news?
Well, I think, like most women do, or I think her initial response was to blame herself, and to also, I think that it was probably just a phase I was going through, or that, you know, it was kind of a midlife crisis for me. And so, but I think there was a lot of shame and guilt on her part, feeling that somehow she hadn't been the good wife that she should have been, because it never would have happened otherwise. And so those were things that I couldn't help her with in any way, of course. I think one of the difficulties...
I mean, did you reassure her that that wasn't the case?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, there were, for a while, we had some... After the issue became public between the two of us, we had some pretty intimate discussions about a lot of aspects of our lives together, and we continued to live together for a while, although we both knew that we weren't going to continue to live together, but it was a matter of economics and that sort of thing that we continued to do that for a while. And so it was tough. I think I've always appreciated the pain that I put her through. She and I were recently on a radio show together, and you know, she said that she knows now that it wasn't something that I chose, and she knows that I'm still the person she loved when she married me, you know. And And so, you know, we've been able to put a lot of that behind us and recognize that we were two people who loved each other and married for all the right reasons, but that things changed in a way that we couldn't fix. You know, it wasn't like we could change this hand that we'd been dealt. And I knew that I couldn't. I think she was a little longer in thinking that somehow we could make it work. We could move away. We could start over. You know, there were things that we could change that would make it work. But in my head, I knew that I couldn't. My decision to leave ultimately came down to feeling. I mean, it was just like, and I hear this from men all the time that I talk to. It's like you're faced with two choices, which neither one of them are good. You know, you're a committed family man, and you don't want to walk away from those commitments you've made. And on the other hand, you're struggling with this issue that's just not going to go away. It's a dilemma that you think about all the time for a long time before you actually come out. And part of what happens when a relationship dissolves is that the man who is going through this has been working on it in his head for a long time before the wife may become aware of it. And then once he announces, then she has to begin the process of grief and loss and questioning and anger and all those things. But there's a real disconnect in terms of the times that they're dealing with. The man has already been through a lot of that process in his head alone.
Well, I think a lot of men don't understand this concept, so maybe you can confirm this. That, a man struggles with this for years.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like all of a sudden you wake up one day and you say, oh, I'm gay. Let me take care of this problem.
Yeah.
Tell my wife, oh, I woke up gay today. I mean, it doesn't work that way.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Some men struggle with this for many, many, many years, and then when they're finally ready to tell their wives, who have no clue, or, they're just really not even thinking along those lines, they think that now that they've made the attempt to be honest, that the wives, in a week or two should just accept this.
I think that's true, that there are a lot of men who, want people to celebrate this because, finally they feel that they've
mm-hmm.
freed themselves of this burden, and they
right.
sort of become gayer than they should be. They're sort of celebrating their sexuality in all the ways, sort of the queen of the pride parade kind of thing, and their families are stunned because they're not ready to be in that place where they can celebrate it with them, and there is a real disconnect in that. And I think it, when men come out, they're very much sexual adolescents,
mm-hmm.
and like adolescent boys, they have a process of learning to deal with it in sexually or socially appropriate ways, and adolescent boys don't always deal with that very well either, but it is a very much an adolescent kind of sexual growth at that time.
Lauren, I'll tell you where I feel there's like a lot of disconnect. Maybe you can address it for us and explain it a little better. I mean, I really, after nearly 30 years, I really think I have this down and understand almost everything. And I do have a lot of sympathy for men who have to struggle for many years in their life. And, I just can't imagine having to leading a lie every day and lead a life that isn't mine. And I know that many of these guys really go through a lot of pain, and I, really strongly work with them to come out and be honest with their wives.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I can't understand is I see this, and I understand the adolescent part that you're talking about, but so many of these guys, it seems like almost like some kind of alien comes and grabs them, and they become, they're like go off to a new world, and they don't even look back in many cases, because they're just, now they have their own life. They kind of like leave the family hanging there. Have you seen that happen?
I have. It's it's not a part of my social friends, but, and I don't know if it's a regional thing. In some ways, I think certainly there are men who probably never should have gotten married. There are men who have married two or three times, maybe more, still trying to pretend that they're not gay. And so there are lots of different kinds of experiences. I can say when I first came out, I heard you talking about support groups for wives, I joined a support group for gay fathers. And so my experience in that group was that those were all men who had a very strong commitment to their families and were invested in doing the right things by their children and participating in their children's lives. And so I don't know if it's just because of those were my values and those were the friends that I chose that I haven't experienced that personally. I've seen it, and I'm certainly aware of what you're talking about, but it hasn't been a part of my personal experience.
Right, and I know some wonderful, wonderful fathers, who are gay.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are extremely responsible to their children, even have partial custody. But usually I find the other thing. I guess what I can't understand is this. You're gay. You can't help it. It wasn't your fault. Here's all the things I'm willing to acknowledge. You didn't really understand it when you got married. You were hoping
uh-huh.
you loved your wife enough that it would go away.
Uh-huh.
You tried your best, you try to be a husband, you try to be a father, but you just, are gay. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So now you have to leave your marriage. Why do some of these guys feel they have to keep torturing their wives, taking them through these long divorce processing, costing them everything they have? Why don't they just say, honey, I'm sorry, it didn't work out, let's see what we can do to help you to move on?
I think it's hard to generalize because there's so many different situations. I think one of the things that happens, particularly in the process of the separation and early in the divorce, is that oftentimes, in order to feel good about yourself, you some people tend to diminish their partner. You know, if I can find fault with my wife, then I can feel like I'm justified in doing what I'm doing, in going against my values. And a personal example of that was when part of my struggle before I left my family was wishing that Lynn would become an alcoholic. You know, I wanted to be able to walk away from the marriage, but I wanted to be able to do it with everybody on my side. And so there was an attempt, I think, certainly not deliberate in my eyes now, but as a part of the separation, put the responsibility on her, and it was a failed attempt to maintain my own self-respect, and now I look at it sort of a pathetic one. But so I think that contributes to part of it. I think that's true in heterosexual marriages as well. When people break up, they tend to go through a time of a lot of criticism and blame of their partner. And, you know, in order to be able to come to a good relationship afterwards, you got to get rid of the anger first, you know. And there are lots of inappropriate ways that people do that, but it's got to come out in order for you to begin to reach a point where you can empathize with the other person and understand the pain that you've put the other person in. And it works on both ways. I mean, the gay man has to be able to understand the pain that the woman's gone through, and she has to understand some of the pain that he's been through. And then you can begin to respect the humanity of the other individual and begin to act as a family in a broader sense of terms. But a lot of people stay dysfunctionally angry with each other, and it's a way of trying to hang on to the relationship. You know, of course, I see it. I hear men talking about their wives doing that too. So I think it can swing both ways in that regard. But in a lot of ways, it's a failure to really recognize that the relationship is broken and won't continue, and just sort of a sick way of sustaining a relationship that never should have happened in the first place.
Well, I guess, you know, my issue is this, is that I understand, like they say, in any marriage it takes two to tango.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't feel that way when a partner is gay. I feel it only takes one partner, because homosexuality doesn't belong in a marriage to a straight woman. And not that it was intentional that, you know, that you thought this was going to happen, but that is the reality. And let me finish the point, and then you can tell me what you think. I think that no matter how nice a gay husband is, and there are some very nice gay husbands for sure, but they can never love a woman in the way she needs to be loved. I mean, in many cases, they're not able to sexually perform with her except for a very minimal amount of times, or, you know, a few years or every now and then. I think it's the feeling of, you know, the sexual pulling away of the sexual neglect, making you feel that, you know, you've taken away the womanhood. It's a matter of finding fault where, you know, like a friend of mine, Jay, used to say that if it were a man doing these things who he loved, it wouldn't nearly bother him as much as being with a woman where he didn't belong. So I just feel that even if a man goes into a marriage with good intentions and loving his wife, you know, he's a gay man who could never love a woman the way a straight man would love her. So I feel that a lot of times she reacts in a way that she wouldn't necessarily react if she had a straight husband who, and I'll give you an example. I know that when I was married, you know, I went into the marriage being a strong woman. But because I was constantly looking to make my husband happy and I was never able to really do it, you know, I kept internalizing it was my failure and I was to blame for it. And I kind of lost myself in that marriage, as many of our women do, because they're just working so hard to try to make their husbands happy, mm-hmm. feeling that they're failure because they don't know what, you know, the problem is. So I did become someone who I didn't even know who I was myself anymore. I became like a stranger to me. And my whole life just revolved around, who I have to become to make this man happy and love me the way I want to be loved. So do you understand the point I'm making here?
I think so.
Correctly?
I think so. I think, first of all, I think my wife would disagree with you, my ex-wife, but I wouldn't want to speak for her by any means. But, as a psychiatrist, I would say, what causes women to choose men who may be gay? What are the characteristics of gay men that cause them to choose men who will either are or turn out to be gay? And there are probably characteristics that are unconsciously chosen because of that.
Because the man is nice?
I didn't understand.
Because the man is nice? Are those the characteristics you're referring to?
Well, it could be part of it. I think gay men tend to be very nurturing. They also tend to be sort of caretakers in a lot of ways. A lot of times, that's why they often engaged in things like providing services of one sort or another, and so they're sensitive to other people's needs, and sometimes that feels real good, and people choose that. But I think there are
Which, incidentally, since you brought up that point, I do want to make a point that from a survey that I've done through the years of working with thousands of women, that the number one commonality that all women have in common is that, not all women, but the majority of women, I would say about 80%, is that they're in fields of helping fields and nurturing fields.
Mm-hmm.
That it seems as a prototype of a woman that a gay man is seeking. And that makes sense to me because he wants somebody who's accepting and caring and loving so that, somebody who can accept him with his flaws, even though they're not outwardly out there.
I'm not comfortable with calling it a flaw in the sense. It is a characteristic for sure.
Right. I don't mean a flaw that you're gay, but just the flaw in the sense that you won't be able to perform as a heterosexual man would. There are a lot of men who sexually are not able to do that.
Yeah, although a lot do for a while, I'm not trying to do...
In their 20s, you can probably do anything. But once you get to your 30s and 40s, it becomes increasingly difficult, for gay men to keep up that pretense.
I mostly involved with mature men, and many of them have been married for many years and have had rather comfortable lives. And I haven't interviewed their wives to know how they felt about it. But I think that there may have been a point where they were not able to function. But, I certainly was up until... I was very... sexually active well into my marriage until actually the time when I came out to my wife. We still were having what I would consider to be a pretty normal sexual relationship, and I was 40 at the time. So, but I think
some men up until they're 40. I think that's kind of like where the separation really starts to come in.
Mm-hmm. Sex diminishes in most relationships, even heterosexuals at that time. So there is some just sort of natural progression of that, and sex becomes a bit routine after a couple's been together for a long time. And so there, whether it's with a man or with a woman, there is a kind of excitement when a person discovers a different sexuality with another partner outside the relationship. But, I wanted to go back to what you were talking about earlier, Bonnie, and that is, relationships that are based on attempting to please the other person, whether they're gay or straight or whatever, really are never work out very well, because you can't obtain your self-esteem from pleasing another person. Gay men fall into that trap all the time, where and I did with my wife. I thought that the problem that we were experiencing was because I couldn't make her happy, so I blamed myself for what was going on and why we were beginning to experience the difficulty we had.
Did you feel there was something lacking in your marriage? Something that was off, an emotional disconnect, perhaps?
When we had our radio interview a couple of weeks ago, both of us would say no, I think, at that time, that we thought we had what everybody should have and wanted until sort of late in our relationship, when it became obvious, you know, that it was not going to work. But I mean, I was blown away at the time that I fell in love with this man. I had no idea that was going to come up. I just didn't have a clue. You know, it's hard to know when you're in a marriage whether your problems are greater or lesser than other people's experiencing. But I don't think that I know, and I don't want to tell Lynn's story. That's her responsibility if she chooses to do it. I know that it wasn't just because I'm gay that we divorced, you know, and that's as much as I really want to say about that. But I don't think it's just a lot of times the issue of the sexuality, although obviously it becomes a defining issue at some point.
Well, I don't think it's just the sexuality, but I think a lot of the sexuality also has to do with infidelity, too. And I think that, you know, a lot of men feel kind of trapped in their marriages because they know they don't really belong there. And like you said earlier, they're kind of torn between family and responsibility versus, you know, what they want and what they need.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that because many of them do feel trapped, you know, we did an interview with a lot of men for a new book that we just had come out called Over the Cliff that was co-written by my, you know, friend Doug Dittmer.
Mm-hmm.
Different Doug than the Doug you're living with, in case people were wondering. Different Doug, right? But I know that when I read the interviews with these 16 different men, all of them had like a common, you know, recurring theme that they really did feel trapped in their marriages. And, you know, most of them were being unfaithful during their marriages, which I don't think is very unusual, do you?
No.
You know, so I think that for some women it's just not the sexuality that becomes, you know, the whole issue. It's also the betrayal, the infidelity. Like, they can't understand that if their husbands are married to them and supposedly love them, why they're out having sex with someone else. And I'm not even sure if it's so much the homosexuality as it is the infidelity. You know, my women are mixed on that. You know, some say it's infidelity, some say it's the sexuality infidelity.
My belief is that it's the lie. You know, that it's
absolutely
being lied to, and the destructiveness of the loss of trust in a relationship. And I think that defines the betrayal much more than what particular sexual activity goes on. And it happens, again, in heterosexual relationships as well. But once I speak from my own experience, once you begin to be more protective with your lover than with your wife, or the other way around in some cases, then your loyalty has shifted and you no longer are keeping that person your primary relationship in your life. And that's where the loss comes in. But I think once that trust is undermined, it's very, very difficult to reestablish it, although at times it can be. But, typically what I hear happens is that there'll be, the spouse will sense that something is wrong. And this is true, I'm talking about both heterosexual and relationships with homosexual men, that when there's an affair, that there's a sense that there's something going wrong in the relationship, but not any evidence. And then the spouse begins to search for evidence and begins to find a little bit. But they begin to feel real crazy because they don't have any facts to support it. And, of course, the person's going to lie to them about it. The more that goes on. Then there's sort of the come-to-Jesus confrontation. And even if the spouse says, look, I know I did wrong, I know I've hurt you, I'll never do it again. And then, so you can kind of maybe get past that first time. But if it happens repeatedly, then there begins to be more of a sense of public embarrassment and shame and, you know, a lot of pretty angry feelings that are a consequence of that being continually treated as if you're not a respected person in the relationship. And I think that's where a lot of that anger comes from.
Well, I think a lot of gay men panic, too, when they first have their first outside relationship, in the sense that, you know, they feel a sense of guilt. They feel, this is not what I want. I want, you know, I wasn't meant to be gay. You know, they feel a sense of dirtiness or shame in many cases.
Oh, sure.
Because, you know, they're not dealing with it at all. So they'll come running back to their wives, even if the wives find out, and they're willing to bargain and make all kinds of deals. And, you know, they mean them at that moment, as I tell the wives. I call it, you know, revisiting the honeymoon, the second honeymoon period.
Uh-huh.
And this is when your husband is just really buying you presents, having more sex with you than he's had with you in years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just to prove to himself, more so than even to you, that he's not gay. And I think that this is very typical behavior of many men who just can't deal with the fact that they are gay the first time they're out there. But like you say, it's just a matter of time until, you know, that desire just becomes overwhelming. And
well, I think,
again.
I think that was certainly true in my case. Looking back on it, both the man that I fell in love with and I were both married in it. And when I got involved, I thought, well, this will be convenient because both of us have boundaries around how far our relationship can go, and it's just going to be a way of dealing with this sexual attraction that I have. And then what happened and what shifted my whole idea of myself was when I really fell in love with this man, and I did begin to experience feelings that I had not experienced in my relationship with my wife. But when I was writing finally out, I was struggling with writing the chapter on my sexual relationship with my wife, because I wondered, did she perceive me to be not quite present in the relationship? And so I called her up and I said, let's, you know, have dinner and talk about this if you're willing. And she was. And she said, you know, when we entered our marriage, we were both sexually inexperienced. We didn't know what to expect. And we both thought it was as good as it gets, you know.
Exactly.
So we had no basis for comparison.
Nothing
we
to
hadn't,
base it off because you were both sexually inexperienced when you got
exactly,
married.
Exactly. You know, and so we didn't perceive there to be any real significant problem there. But then when I experienced this with a man, that I found a lot of those feelings that I heard adolescent boys talking about when they first began to experience their sexuality with a female, then it's like, oh, that's what they were talking about. You know, that's now I know, because I was beginning to experience feelings on a whole different level than I had before. And that's when I knew I couldn't put this away. You know, but, you know, a lot of men set up their homosexual liaisons when they're married with those kinds of restrictions. You know, often they say no kissing and no anal sex. You know, those are two pretty...
Right, exactly. That would have an emotional connection.
You know,
the
kissing and anal sex is probably the most intimate ways that two men can be present together. And if you set some boundaries around that. What you're saying is, you know, I'm not going to allow this to slip too far into this gay area. I'm going to sort of maintain some balance on feeling like I'm at least a bisexual, or I'm curious, or I'm questioning, or whatever they want to call it. But they try and set some boundaries on what those relationships are going to mean based on their behavioral experiences with them.
Lauren, has your wife met somebody since you?
Oh, yes. Unfortunately, she married a man not too long after we were divorced. It was probably within 3 to 5 years, and he tragically died of an illness about 10 years after they were married. He was a wonderful guy, and my kids loved him, and it was a good experience for her, and she moved on with her life, and she has actually recently married again for a third time.
Expressed here, you know, about when you found your relationship with, you know, your husband, how different it was for you, you know, over having a relationship with your wife, that you finally understood what, you know, young guys were feeling when they talked about passion, excitement. Do you feel that have you discussed with her, does she feel the same way now that she's with a straight man? Or after she married her straight man?
I guess, Bonnie, I would not want to speak for her in that regard. You know, in fact, when I was writing that chapter, I asked her that specifically, you know, how would you rate me as a lover? And she thought I was a very good lover. And she said, I'm much more experienced now than I was at the time we were married. So I don't think that she would say, and I don't think I'm speaking for her here, because I think I'm quoting her right from this conversation, that she would say that I was attentive to her needs and I was a good lover.
Right, and there are some gay men who are.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you know, I met a gay man one time and he told me he's made it his life mission to make his wife happy sexually.
Uh-huh. Yep.
You know, because he feels that, you know, she should at least have that, mm-hmm. even though it wasn't very exciting for him, nor did he really care.
Right.
But because he loved her, he tried to do the best. So I have no doubt there are, and I've talked to some women who said they had, you know, really good lovers for a while anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You did make a comment that I just want to explore a little bit, because a couple of people have emailed me since you made this comment shortly ago. And I just want to know if I misunderstood you with this, but this comes back to an article I recently read and I've told some of my women about, and it was by, are you familiar with Joe Court?
I know some of his work.
Okay, but you've heard of Joe Court.
Yes.
And he, you know, talks about it also, about women who marry gay men. And he made a comment, and now he made this a couple of years ago, but I just read it, you know, last week. And it said that Court says that women should look deeper. Straight people rarely marry gay people accidentally. And I think that you had mentioned something similar to that, or somebody just wrote me a note to ask you about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that women should look and see what's attracted to them, what gay qualities. Am I misquoting you? Because I don't want to.
No, well, I think what I had said was that people make their choices unconsciously in relationships, and that there may be unconscious factors which draw them to a certain type of man. So, I believe that why we choose the people we choose very much operates outside of our awareness altogether, and there may be, tend to agree in some ways with what he's saying. I'd have to read the whole thing to know for sure that I'm agreeing with him.
Well, see, I guess the problem I have with that is that since somebody like you, you know, who claims that, and I believe you, that he had no idea that he was gay to start with, you know, there are a lot of men who, when they get married, you know, they don't identify at all as being gay.
Mm-hmm.
And reject that in every possible way, and even act homophobic in many cases. You know, how would a woman even be able to tell that if a man himself can't tell that?
Well, they wouldn't. It wouldn't be in terms of being gay. It would be more just sort of characteristics. like nurturing and those kinds of things that they would seek out. I don't think we really know why we choose the people we do, but we tend to choose the same type over and over again. You know, in many ways, it's pretty common history that women who grow up in alcoholic families, for example, choose alcoholic husbands. Well, there's no reason to think that there might be some of their own experiences which would cause them to choose, perhaps in reaction to being in a family where there were very hostile and rigid men, you know, or angry men or explosive men or sort of hyper-masculine men, why they might want to choose someone who's a softer man. And with that may come a greater tendency for them to be gay at some point.
I don't know. See, the man I married was an athlete. You know, he was a kung fu expert. He was a black belt. You know, to me, he represented everything that masculinity represented. You know, I was a strong woman at the time that I met him. And I really wanted someone who I could lean on, someone who was stronger than I was. So, you know, I knew plenty of gay people when I was growing up. You know, I grew up in California for a few years. And, you know, I was certainly out there in the 60s. You know, it's like modern-day hippie back then. So gay was certainly not something that I wasn't exposed to. But, you know, I just felt like there was no way that this husband would be gay based on the fact of, you know, he didn't have any effeminate characteristics. He was strong. He was a kung fu instructor. So,
were you saying that you really were looking for someone who wasn't gay? I mean, was that a conscious choice at that time, Bonnie?
Yes, I was.
Huh.
Well, no, I wasn't looking for someone who wasn't gay. I was looking, I mean, it didn't come into my head that, let me check out if this guy is gay or not. I mean, I didn't think he was, or I wouldn't marry him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what I'm, I mean, a lot of women that I work with, they have husbands who are all kinds of, you know, they're construction workers and they're ball players and they do all kinds of, you know, stuff that's very masculine.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not quite sure, like, what you would be consciously looking for.
Well, I don't think you're consciously looking for it. I think you're.
Uh-huh.
That's the part of our choices that operate outside of our awareness. So you may consciously look for a man who appears very masculine, but unconsciously are seeking someone who has a softer, perhaps more feminine side that's underneath that. You know, a macho man who's a sensitive man. You know, there may be, and you know, I don't know what your husband's experience was, but he may have not had much idea about it either. I don't know. But, you know,
well,
I think...
Well, you know, when
one,
he married me, you know, we got married in the late 70s, and, you know, he truly, truly loved me. We are very, very close now, you know, 30 years later.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the thing is that he truly loved me. He had, you know, experiences certainly with guys before he married me, but he didn't make the connection in his head that it was gay because, like
right.
you said, he wasn't kissing them, he wasn't having anal sex with them, he wasn't holding their hand or having any kind of romantic relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so in his own mind, he just, you know, thought he was straight with issues, like Ted Haggard, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's,
you know, he was hoping that if he loved me enough and married me and had a family and I could provide for him all the things that he missed in his own life, you know, because he came from kind of a broken family.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, a sense of security to him, someone who loved him unconditionally, you know. So I guess that was the appeal to him. So
mm-hmm.
I really do believe in my heart that he didn't understand his sexuality when he married me.
Well, I think, you know, it's very hard when, I mean, most people, when we were, as you said, our contemporaries, you know, it was sort of expected that people would get married not too long after they got out of college, at least in Nebraska, where I grew up. And if you didn't have somebody on the hook by the time you graduated, you know, there was something wrong. And by the time I got out of medical school, you know, probably 85% of my class was married, and there weren't many of us who were single. And but, you know, it wasn't until after I got out of med school that birth control pill became sort of universally available, and so sex prior to that time carried a lot of risk of unwanted pregnancies, and so it was a different time for sure. But I think, you know...
Did you come from a religious background?
Yeah, I grew up a Lutheran and in a community that had five Lutheran churches, of 1,000 people, but five Lutheran churches. So, and most of our social activities either happened through the school or through the churches. And my mother and my extended family, and in fact my father's family that I knew fairly well, were all quite committed Christians. And so it wasn't something that they... I preached to us as much as we just sort of were enveloped in it as we matured. And and I grew up in, and Lynn also grew up in a similar town as a Lutheran. And so, you know, our marriage in every way looked like it should have been the ideal marriage.
Uh-huh.
We came from very similar backgrounds, and that was what we knew and had experienced. And so it wasn't like a Bible thumping kind of a community, but very much sort of a basic part of our cultural experience growing up. You know, the other thing I would point out is in the 50s when I was growing up, was a time of McCarthyism and all the witch hunts for communists as well as gay men. And one of the things that was very interesting as I did the research for Finally Out was looking at the history of what was going on in Idaho at the time. Senator Craig was 10 years old, and it was the same thing, of course, that I was experiencing because he and I are the same age. And there were the newspapers were full of the things that the homosexuals were doing to undermine the community, and how the male children were going to be stolen and recruited into a life of homosexuality. And you know, there's a book on the, I think it's called The Boys of Boise or something. I mean, I don't remember exactly the title, but talks about that. And when I'm thinking, no wonder he couldn't say that he was gay. You know, he never said, I'm not attracted to men. He never said, I've never had sex with men. He said, I'm not gay. And I think for many, many married men, that's a very, very difficult step to take. You can allow yourself to think you might have attractions. You might allow yourself to have some same-sex behavior. But the next step is an identity as a gay man, and that's a very difficult leap to make for a lot of men.
It definitely is, and, you know, I do appreciate everything you're saying. You know, I always tell gay people that I can understand, you know, in many ways why they wouldn't want to come out. And I do understand that, you know, because for some people it is a hardship with their families.
Oh, yeah.
Also with their churches, with their communities. You know, a lot of people don't live in a big city like I live in. You know, they live in small towns where homophobia is still raging.
Oh, yeah.
I think it has to be, you know, the hardest thing, you know, to have to grow up gay when you're being told that you're going to go to hell.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that it's deviant, it's disgusting, and people still get beat up for it, bullied for it. So, I mean, even the young man, every week I watch, I think one of my favorite shows is Glee.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So, and they have that, you know, guy Kurt, you know, who's a gay kid.
Yeah.
In the show, and he was talking about his life before he got picked for the show, before he became part of that show, how he used to get, you know, bullied all the time because he was gay, you know, openly gay. And so it takes tremendous courage. I mean, and I can't even begin to think, you know, even though I am Jewish and I was a Jewish activist in the 70s, so I certainly knew some kind of persecution. But the point is that I do understand it. I just don't understand why people can't, you know, when they know it and, you know, if they can accept it, they don't have to come out, but do they have to get married and bring down, you know, somebody else with them? That's, you know, a point that I always ask them. You know,
I guess, you know, my point would be, My point would be that many of them are already married when they make that discovery. So, but, you know, I do want your listeners to know that I am on their side as well. And what I'm hoping we can do in these kinds of conversations is reach some general understanding of what the other has experienced. And, you know, draw some sense of community and discourse based on understanding what it was like for the other. Because I don't mean to try and defend gay men when they have behaved inappropriately in their primary relationships in any respect. But I think it's important for us to try and understand each other.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, women would probably have an easier time understanding men if there would be more compassion at the time that these men are coming out, you know, as far as how they treat their families. I think a lot of it, you know, in fact, in our new book that I wrote with Doug, you know, Over the Cliff, you know, one of the things we discuss is, you know, different strategies for after you come out on how it, you know, when you have children, it's a whole different situation, you know, when you have to co-parent children together. And, you know, one of the things that I tell women all the time, I'm very, you know, emphatic about this, is that it's not just about you. It's about your children having good mental health in this whole situation, and that you can't be gay bashing your husband in front of your children. You know, if you want to vent, come to my support chat and say what you want to say in front of other people who are adults.
Yeah.
Keep away from the kids. You know, the kids are, you know, half their father. It's, you know, every child has a father that is half them. And you don't want to give them all kinds of complexes. And what if your child's gay? You don't want to give the message it's a horrible thing, you know. And I think that's another reality that many of us dealt with. You know, my daughter was a lesbian. I say was because, unfortunately, I lost her 8 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But, you know, I tried to at least bring her, you know, make her feel good about her life, about herself. You know, she was 22 when she passed away, but she was very actively involved in the gay community. I welcomed her girlfriends like they were my own daughters. Was I happy that my daughter was gay? Not particularly. You know, I wanted her, you know, to have the same things that, you know, I wanted, you know, for myself. I wanted
of course.
To have my, you know, and it's a hard life, but I accepted it because, you know, I didn't want her to have to lead a life like her dad had led, you know, trying to be somebody who she's not. So I did everything I could to encourage her to be happy with who she was, and, you know, sexuality wasn't the issue.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, there's a higher percentage of gay children coming out of a marriage where a parent is gay.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's the reality of my studies through all these years. You know, it's almost double the chance. And it's only fair for your children to have, like, a better chance of having a happy life than your husband's had, so they don't have to live their life hiding, you know, that they can accept themselves. So when this news comes out, of course the woman's in shock, and of course she's upset, and many times she's pissed. But you have to be able to separate that from the children. I think the children have to be the primary concern on both parties.
And I think we have to be sensitive to the fears that the kids, because they know that, or may be afraid, even if they don't know, that they might turn out gay too, you know. And both of my daughters experienced that as a sense of anxiety about my being gay was, does that mean that I might be at risk here?
Exactly. You know? And a lot of kids really have to live with that fear.
Oh yeah.
They don't want to be gay.
No, and not at all. I don't. You know, I don't think anyone would choose to be gay
exactly.
At the time. The idea that it's a choice is sort of ridiculous for most of us because none of us would want to go through the experiences that we have in discovering our homosexuality. That doesn't mean we're unhappy that we are once we get through that process, but the.
But it certainly wouldn't be your first choice if you had a choice. I did one time I did a survey with 336 men when I was writing for a gay newspaper many years ago, and they were all openly out happy men. You know, they weren't very who they were. But I, you know, did this survey over a period of 3 months, and I said to them, if I could give you a pill tomorrow, and you could be straight, would you take it?
Right.
Everyone except for three people said yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that they were unhappy being gay. They just said that it's a hard way to have to live.
Yeah,
and
it is easier now, I think, because there's in some ways because there's more of a sense of community, and you don't have to hide your lives in the way you did at one time. But
depending on where you are.
Yeah, that's definitely the case.
But you're right. You know, the whole thing that we can hope for is that there's better understanding, because, you know, there are a lot of people who, you know, you don't want to have victims in this. And men should understand that, you know, like you say, it's not your fault. You're gay. You don't choose to be gay. You are gay. But on the other hand, if you're leaving a family, you know, they're not choosing that either.
That's right.
And you have to be emotionally and financially responsible to them.
I
that's
absolutely,
the only thing I ask for.
Oh, I absolutely agree that if you have children, you have an obligation to be there emotionally and economically for them.
That's the only thing I would ask for. And I think that everything else could be worked out. But unfortunately, that's not what we're dealing with. But that doesn't mean we don't keep trying.
Yeah, you know, I have to say there were some bitter times when we first were working out some of those issues. And but for most couples, when they divorce, there's a lot of bitterness in resolving some of those issues. And unfortunately, children get caught in all of those situations far too often than they should.
Lauren, maybe you can just address this one issue once again, because I'm still not real clear on it. When women say to me, and I don't have the answer, so I'm saying it to you, if my husband were gay, well, you know, you said, you talked a little bit about, you know, the man you fell in love with. Prior to that time, were you out there having, you know, sexual relationships with other men?
No. I had one contact when I was about 32, but I was not engaged in sort of secrets, clandestine, sleazy kinds of hookup kinds of activities that go on. And, you know, that's a topic we should probably talk about another time, because that is unfortunately what happens to a lot of married men, is that's the way they choose to experience their same-sex attractions, and it's a very high risk for both of them and their spouse. And then there's some indication that that's the area highest in growth in spread of HIV at this moment. So it's a high-risk thing, and unfortunately it happens a lot in places where there isn't much tolerance for some homosexuals in general, but particularly for, I think, what the Centers for Disease Control calls men who have sex with men, but who don't identify themselves as gay.
Right. But I'm just, you know, I guess a lot of women don't understand if you're gay. Okay, they can probably deal with that. But why can't you wait until after we split up before you start having sexual relations with other men?
Well, I guess how are you going to know you're gay if you haven't? I mean, I think it's important to talk about in terms of sexual attraction, sexual behavior, and sexual identity. And when saying you're gay is really a sexual identity, and that's a mature state of development that comes about through a long process. You know, there's early descriptions of the coming out process define several stages. But for men who are late in life to come out, all of those, that linear description of the coming out process has no merit, because it's not like that at all. And one of the points of my book was the idea that it's anything but linear. There's a 2 steps forward and 1 step back. But there are men who remain happily married who know that they have primary attractions to men but never act on them. There are men who act on them and behave in homosexual ways. But most of those people don't have a gay identity. I think that comes after you leave the relationship and you become a part of the community and you have some public acknowledgement of your sexuality. So I think it's a complicated discussion in some ways, but it is a process that people go through, and it's lived out in many, many different ways.
Well, I do want to say that I loved your book, and I just want to talk about it a little bit. Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight. And even though you are a psychiatrist, and I was expecting to really be confused because, you know, I'm not a great reader when it comes to psychological journals and stuff, this was really great reading. I mean, it was clear, and it was really honest, and it really taught me a lot. I mean, well, it didn't teach me a lot, but it really confirmed a lot of what, you know, I've known. And the way you articulated it was really beautifully written. So I think that, you know, it really will help a lot of women, because we are primarily women listening to the show, although I do have some wonderful men listeners who also listen in, you know, some of my gay ex-husband audience. And, you know, I think that they would really benefit from reading your book also, because there's so much in here that talks about in an easy-to-read way, you know, that's not all, you know, like I say, tied up with all kinds of, you know.
Well, that was my intent, Bonnie, and I appreciate that you recognize that. And, you know, as I said, I do reach out to the women in your audience, and part of my intent was to help families understand why men have made the choices that they've made and why they've behaved in ways that may appear hurtful. And if you feel that it has addressed that, then I feel like it's been a success.
Yeah, in fact, several women bought the book after you were on here last time.
Oh, really? Oh,
they were really impressed with the book. You know, they got back to me, they read it, and they felt they learned a lot from it. And as I tell my women, we don't have to always agree all the time on everything. You know, I don't know any two people who agree all the time on everything.
No.
We just have to have the basic understanding of each other.
And not shout at each other, you know.
Right? I mean,
I mean, that's the way discourse happens so often these days. It's just two people shouting at each other and nothing much is accomplished. And I would welcome their comments on my website, Magnetic Fire, as well. You know, I'd be happy to get the perspective of some of the women and what they've been through. So,
how do you feel about bisexuality, Lauren?
Oh, let's have another hour to talk about that. I get a lot of questions about that. It goes back to, you know, I thought I was heterosexual once. I went through a period when I thought I was bisexual. Now I'm gay, you know. But I think there are truly people who do experience somewhat equal attraction to both sexes and can live that out. But there are a lot of men who hide behind that label because announcing or dealing with this the idea that they're gay is just too threatening to them. So, I mean, that's a personal take on it, but that will make a lot of bisexual men angry to hear.
No, that'll make a lot of gay men pretending to be bisexual angry.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I have that same issue because I don't believe in bisexuality. I believe that it's a gateway, you know, it's part of the movement going from straight to gay.
Mm-hmm.
You're crossing the bisexual road, you know, like when you're younger. And that doesn't negate the fact that, you know, you can't love your wife, but... To me, I told you the great dividing line for me is the penis. Once you want it, it's gay. You know, I try to make it real simple. You know, I don't try to make it number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I make it 1. But, you know, like I said, a lot of times I get feedback from, you know, supposedly bisexual men that I don't know what I'm talking about. But I think that most gay men who are honest with themselves and comfortable with it, you know, will say that that's true.
Yeah, actually, the most recent post I had on Magnetic Fire addresses that very issue. So, people who are interested in that subject might want to take a look at that post. It was someone who was had responded to something I'd written earlier in my.
Now, is that your blog or your website?
Yeah, Magnetic Fire is my blog.
Okay, and how do you get to it? Magnetic.
Magnetic Fire is all one word. .com.
.com. Oh, okay. So let me take it real fast while you're on the phone. Before we go, and it says Magnetic Fire, a community of mature gay men.
Mm-hmm.
And this looks very nice.
Good.
By you, it has your book here. This is great. You can order it. It has your picture here.
Yeah.
And it has the archives. Oh, so are these like articles you've written?
Yeah, there's some, yeah. Since I've been doing a lot of speaking and interviews and stuff, I haven't sort of kept up with that as well as I should, but all the articles that I've written are still available, and you can search for different topics on the page, and it will bring up different areas of discussion that have gone on. So,
I think that's great. So if anybody wants this link, if you haven't had a chance to write it down, you can write to me at bonk@aol.com. And if it's okay with you, Lauren, I will announce this in my upcoming newsletter.
Oh, thank you.
People can access it and certainly use it as a resource for many of the men who come to me as well. Do you think they would really benefit from it?
Yeah, I do. You know, any time you search for mature gay men, you come up with 1,000 sites of hookups, you know, and pictures of erect penises, you know. But what I've tried to do is to have a place where people can go for discussions like we've had tonight about what being a mature gay man is all about. And so that's it's specifically designed to address issues in a realistic way.
Mm-hmm. Well, Misty, are you there?
I am. I'm here.
We didn't blow you away, did we?
No, I'm just I'm actively listening to all this good advice.
Good.
So, do you have anything you would like to say before we hang up with Lauren?
No, I think it's good. I think it's going to be a good perspective for the women. I especially appreciate the website you say that you've created it for mature gay men. I think that's something that a lot of our women, hopefully married and still trying to get out of the marriage, and they're trying to, both of them trying to mutually do it in a respectful way, would be so helpful to some of the people we work with. And it's just refreshing to hear that there are avenues out there to take when you wish to get out, you know, to be respectful to both sides.
Absolutely.
So, get to be truly who you are. So it's just very refreshing to hear that. Very refreshing.
Well, thank you, Misty. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
So we really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Now, the best way to buy the book, is it going through Amazon or Barnes & Noble?
Well, if you go to Barnes & Noble, you can order it. It's not in the stores yet. We're hoping that the distributors will get it there before long.
But
you can get the number on Amazon and order it through any independent or major bookstore.
Okay, and it's finally out, Letting Go of Living Straight, The Psychiatrist's Own Story by Lauren A. Olson, M.D. And, Lauren, is the book available? I have to go back. You can buy the book on your site, too, right?
Yeah, it'll take you to... the other thing about that I would like to point out, because it's an important issue for a lot of people, and that is that it's available in a PDF download, or it's also available in the electronic versions, because a lot of men, frankly, are afraid to buy it and carry it. You know, they don't want to be walking through an airport about coming out, you know. It is available in those electronic versions.
Yeah, I know what you mean. A lot of women are afraid to get my books, too. If they could deliver them in a plain brown envelope, I said, sure, no problem.
Yeah.
It'll just say Amazon on it. It's not going to say Amazon delivering a book about your gay husband.
Yeah.
That's a worry, so I know the fear. So, Lauren, I really appreciate it. I hope it's not imposing too much. Maybe in a couple months you'll come back again.
I'd be happy to do that, Bonnie. I appreciate it, the invitation.
All right, and thank you so much, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was certainly an interesting talk, wasn't it?
Very interesting. He had a lot of good points to make. And many of the points, I'll be quite frank, I agreed with many of the points. So I appreciate his honesty, and I think it's just will be very helpful to me and many of the women we work with. I really do.
I just feel uncomfortable, Misty. You know, and like I said, I agree with some points that he made, but there are certain things I'm still not really comfortable with. I don't think that we can place the blame of women looking for men with gay traits. How about you?
I was trying to look at that from both sides, and my answer is going to be, I don't know if, and this isn't to point him out, to point you out, you know, nothing like that, but it's just, you know, how can a gay husband truly understand where the straight wife is coming from, you know, and how can the straight wife truly understand 100% where the gay husband's coming from? I mean, there are going to be some battles, I guess, that we never win as a straight wife,
that no, you know, that everyone's not going to see our perspective on.
Well,
I don't know.
Do you think that we consciously look for men with gay traits before we marry them?
Consciously, no. Subconsciously, I don't know, because, I mean, I've worked with a lot of women that have trauma issues. And sometimes those women, quite frankly, are, you know, especially if it's centered around sex, that they're more comfortable with someone than not pressing them for sex. So
right.
Would that
and
be
I understand
that
in that case.
On that level, I understand. But for myself, no, I didn't want to choose a gay husband. Why were some of the factors I chose him? You know, now that I'm 20 years wiser, I guess I should say, I would have never chosen him. But, you know, I was much younger then, and I chose him. It's part of my life now. It's part of my past. And the good thing about it, I learned a lot of good lessons, even though, excuse me, I'm very open how much domestic violence was in my marriage. And, of course, that's not the stamp of every gay-straight marriage. I make that clear always. It was just, I learned so much. I would never want to go back and repeat it. God, please don't make me do that. But I did. I learned a lot. I learned a lot of things. And first of all, when you know, you learn things of what are important. And just coming out of that, I had to find who I was again. So, you know, when I like who I am today. You know, I really do. I like who I am. I love who I am today. So I'm a different person now. And did I choose him because he was gay? No. I didn't know he was gay. And, you know, subconsciously, I don't know why I chose him. You know, being a therapist, there's so little we know about the subconscious, you know. I don't know. I mean, I don't know of any reasons why I would subconsciously chose him, but, of course, it's not come to my conscious, I guess. You know, is it possible? Anything's possible. But I certainly didn't know he was gay. And it wasn't a good marriage for lots of reasons, not just for him being gay. So I think that's difficult for a lot of straight women to hear, because in some regard, I think that may possibly I could see how a woman that's already wounded anyway from being married to a gay man, it could wound them even farther by placing some, you know, more blame on them. Because oftentimes, as you know, when a straight woman's married to a gay man, oftentimes that straight woman feels like she has been at fault for a lot of things and just keeps getting depleted of her competency, you know. So I can see when a straight woman hears that, what that can do. You know, they can just deflate you even more. So, you know, I don't know. I think that's a very interesting question. Am I going to agree with it? No. And I'm not going to completely disagree with it either. You know, I don't know for what reasons I chose my ex, but I just know now and today I wouldn't choose him.
Yeah. Well, we can have that conversation another time. I don't want to discourage any women. I really don't believe that women know when they're getting married in almost all cases.
Right. Well, let me make that clear. Consciously, absolutely, I completely agree with you. Subconsciously, I don't know. That's the only part I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't even think subconsciously. You know, they think they may feel good because somebody's not, you know, sexually aggressive all over them.
Mm-hmm.
But I still don't think they equate that necessarily with gay. But
mm-hmm.
we'll do more research and we'll look into
right.
that.
I understand what you're saying.
In the meantime, we're going to say goodnight to our listeners because our time is almost over. And we just want to make you aware that if you would like any information, you can write to me directly at bondk@aol.com. Or you can look at Misty's beautiful website. Tell them, Misty.
MistyHall.com, and that's MistyHall.com.
Right. And if you need any further information, you can go to my website at gayhusbandswithans.com, and there you'll have lots of information and lots of ways to have support. And that's what we're here for, to give you the support you need while you're going through gay husband recovery. And tonight we'll do a lot of thinking about it, and we'll have some discussion on it next Sunday night. So, Misty, it's been a great hour and a half.
Yes, it has.
And let's say goodnight to our listeners in your very wonderful way.
Good night and love to all.
All right. Good night, everybody. Talk to you next Sunday. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.